Good evening, Lowell, Massachusetts.
And now, presenting a joint production of For the Pops and the NAI Network.
The following contest is scheduled for one fall.
A verbal history of chaotic wrestling by the two men who were there from the beginning. Hall of Fame ring announcer and commentator, Rich Palladino.
He is the current, reigning, and defending Chaotic Wrestling Heavyweight Champion.
Former owner of Chaotic Wrestling for nearly two decades, Jamie Jamakowski.
No blood, no cursing, stay off the barriers.
It's time to
let the chaos begin
on the NAI Pop Network.
All right, we are back together again. Jamie, I don't know if you want to plug in the Peaches and Herb reunited and it feels so good, but here we are still thousands of miles away from each other. You, of course, in Hawaii. I am here in Massachusetts. Still, you are playing golf. I am playing Golf Clash on my phone, but you are listening to episode number 7 of Let the Chaos Begin. Jamie, how are you?
I'm doing great. And Rich, I missed you last time. I had the New Age Insiders and I, we did a fill-in episode because of our summer schedules. But yeah, I'm here. This is actually the last podcast I'll be recording from Hawaii because I actually literally am getting on a plane tomorrow to come back home. So next time we see each other, hopefully it will be live and in person. And
yes.
I'm actually excited to get back between you on this and then Scotty Slade on For the Pops. I'm excited to see everybody again. I kind of miss everybody at this point.
I'm going to be honest. I'm excited just to be back in the same room whenever you get home because, you know, you and I kind of like texted and talked about it. But I kind of feel like disconnected doing this whole Skype deal and whatnot.
That's because we're men in our 40s, Rich. We don't talk on the phone for an hour at a time to anybody. You know, I'm sure if we were two teenage girls doing a podcast, it would go on for 3 hours. But like literally between you and Scotty Slade, when I do these on Skype, these are like the longest phone conversations I have with anybody at this point in my life. I'm like, how can people do this? Just sit on the phone anymore. But, and the other real fun thing is, Rich, I know you and I've talked a lot offline, is that one thing I'm really excited about is as we head into the fall season with Let the Chaos Begin, is a lot of the feedback I've gotten is people suggesting topics to me. I'm sure you've been getting a lot of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now a lot of people that I've talked to, I'm saying, well, great, I'd love to cover that. Will you come in and be on with Rich and I? Because the one thing I think I sometimes need is I don't want to say a fact checker, but people who were there at the time who can maybe either corroborate or disagree with my versions of certain stories. So I'm excited that when I get back, we can start confirming some of these people. But I think for the people who are listening, it's going to be a great lineup of names they know coming up over the next couple of months. So I'm excited for that, too.
I am, too. I think there's a lot of good things we can do. I think we've done a lot of good things. But we're still in the infancy stages, and I agree. Having a guest here and there from the old days is just going to be best for business. I know an old friend of ours who is home visiting for a few months that I've already talked to about possibly luring him in.
Awesome.
We'll just leave it at that. But yeah, just I think there's a lot of great things to do. I think it's always just great to talk about how this whole chaotic wrestling thing started. Where it's been. I mean, I've even had some feedback. People actually want to talk more current stuff. You know, there's been so much good stuff in 18 years, and now the company's at a point where we're, you know, going on Facebook Live and streaming entire shows, you know, and chatting with fans and things like that. So you talk about how technology's kind of taken over the way you taught me how to use Skype, you know, stuff like that. But there's a lot of good things to be had in the future, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Rich. That's the other feedback I've gotten is talking about more current stuff, and that's one of the reasons I know we both want to bring guests in more, because I think what'll make the current stuff even better is, you know, we can have the people there. They're live and in person and talk through their versions and their sides of it. You know, you didn't like my idea because as we're recording this today, I know Chaotic Wrestling is doing a Facebook Live of their last show, which included, from what I've seen on social media, the bloodiest match in Chaotic history.
Between DL breaking his leg on the guardrail, he broke that rule, and the no blood, no cursing, we broke the blood rule. Well, I mean, you can't help it if you get hit in the head with something and you're bleeding. I mean, hey, how you know, whoops. It was very bloody.
All I'm saying is my idea for tonight's podcast was I would have watched the Facebook Live show with you, and I could have commented as we went. The only problem is I probably would have had to stay in Hawaii, because something tells me that when I saw all the blood and I heard the cursing, I wouldn't be welcome back in New England anytime soon, based on my personal opinions.
This was more about the blood than the cursing. But regardless of that, but let's get into tonight's topic, Jamie. Let's talk about the good old days. You know, we got some good feedback, and you kind of threw the ball in my court to kind of pick this week's topic. And I think what we should talk about is the Chaotic Training Center, the old CTC, which of course now is Brian Fury's New England Pro Wrestling Academy, 100 Belmont Ave, North Andover, Massachusetts. But I wanted to kind of get into that because we've talked about it over and over how Chaotic Wrestling started running shows in the year 2000. We opened a training facility in 2001, just a little over a year later. So my first question to you, sir, is, was that part of the original plan? We've already talked about what the scope of Chaotic Wrestling was going to be and how it was going to be different than everything else out there. Was having our own school part of the plan?
No, having a school was not part of the original plan. And it came up because when we brought Ben Lentini on board, the big thing we wanted to do was make ourselves different from everybody else. And again, we've talked about this repeatedly. If we make one of our first t-shirts, I think one of them will be, you know, Chaotic Wrestling. We treated it like it was a business. And that's what it came down to, is one of the things Ben said to us was, if we want to be better than everybody else and we want to offer WWE something, because that was always our only goal, then he said we needed a school. And we said, okay, well, none of us know a damn thing about how to teach wrestling. So what do we do?
Well, so with that being said, so many questions are coming into my mind. And, you know, when you're in Hawaii and I'm still at home, we don't format things as much as we like to and kind of have topics. So I'm going to completely go off the cuff here. So, okay, so none of you guys in the management portion of Chaotic Wrestling had the physical tools, the knowledge to run a wrestling school. How did you go about finding the guy that would end up being our head trainer?
Well, what happened was we actually approached Walter Kowalski first. So we approached Walter that what we want is we wanted a deal with Kowalski. Because at the time, Rich, what was the name of the promotion Kowalski used to run kind of on his own?
The IWF, the International Wrestling Federation.
Well, the IWF had kind of wound down at that point. Okay? And so he wasn't really running shows. And as we hit middle of 2001, which is the time period we're talking about right now, we were starting to use more and more of Kowalski guys. We were using Slick Wagner Brown. We were starting to use April Hunter, Arch Kincaid, John Walters, Vince Vicalo, Aaron Stevens. So that was,
Louis Ortiz.
Louis Ortiz, Big Mike Studd. That was kind of the first group of Kowalski guys that we started using. So it made sense. We were using all of his students. We needed a school. So our big thing was, at the time, and again, maybe newer wrestling fans don't understand this, for decades, Killer Kowalski's name was synonymous with wrestling training.
Oh, yeah.
He was known as the trainer in the industry. Fair?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And here he was in our backyard. So we actually approached him, and this was Randy Miller who approached Kowalski. I don't remember how he first reached out to Walter, but basically what happened was Walter Kowalski's right-hand man, his head trainer at the time, was a guy by the name of Mike Hollow. Now, Rich, you probably know more about Mike's independent professional wrestling background than even I do. So bring people up to speed on who Mike was.
So Mike was like I said, he was Walter's right-hand man. He had teamed regularly with our good friend Danson Dukes Dalton, Jim McCarthy. Back then, I think he was Kid Delicious, the Outlaw Cody James. He had all kinds of different fun names. But Hollow and Dukes were a tag team. But Hollow was he was pretty much like the face of the promotion. He was the good-looking all-American from Fort Myers, Florida, you know, just the guy that you could rally behind. He was a great wrestler, he's a great person. Mm-hmm. And one of the most prominent trainers, is that the right word? Prominent, I guess.
Yeah, prominent.
Be a better word. Yeah, so he had, but he was pretty much 95% a Kowalski guy.
And what promotions did he work at locally, Rich?
Primarily Walter, and then Walter, of course, had an affiliation with Mike Sparta's WWA, World Wrestling Alliance. They kind of worked together, so you would see a lot of similar guys on those shows because WWA was another place for Kowalski students to appear on live shows. Plus, they had the affiliation with Mike's brother, Freddie, Freddie Sparta, or Fred Shuley, if you will, longtime referee for the WWF. So there was an affiliation there. That was, from what I remember, okay. These are the early days of when I broke in 93. So I remember when I first broke in going to Kowalski shows, and that was the first time I'd seen Mike Hollow and, you know, Trey the Smooth Operator and gorgeous Chris Duffy, God rest his soul. And just bold. There was a gentleman, Bulldozer, Tim McNeeney.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I mean, so many great, great guys that came out of his shows and his school. So not to get off topic, because I know I went right after the head trainer, but that was the whole thing. So Kowalski was, as you said, the most respected, most well-known trainer of professional wrestlers in the New England area. Was there any hesitation of, you know, angering Kowalski? I know you guys went to him, but...
Hold on, though, because you're getting ahead of me, though. Because our first goal was to have a deal with Walter Kowalski. So however it happened, Randy got in touch with Mike, with Mike Hollow. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the show, I'm going to call him Coach, because that's what we all call Mike Hollow. Mike Hollow is Coach to this day. If I call him now to see if he wants to golf on a Thursday, it's, hey, Coach, what's going on? So Randy somehow got in touch with Coach Hollow and set up a dinner meeting. And across from Kowalski's old school in Malden, like Kitty Corner, there was an Italian restaurant. And for anybody listening, if you want a picture, a stereotypical neighborhood Italian restaurant in Boston, this was it. Like the red leather couches, the velour curtains. It was dark. It had the big, heavy chandeliers. And I guess Walter and his wife, Teresa, who I'll talk a lot about tonight, Walter and his wife, Teresa, were regulars there. So I remember we set up this meeting, Randy and I, we met up, we drive down to Malden, and we walk into this restaurant, and, you know, it's a bright afternoon out. You walk in and your eyes have to adjust because it's so dark in there. And this may have been the first time I ever actually met Kowalski in person, at least definitely in my Chaotic Wrestling years. So we walk in, and it was like a mafia set. It was like something out of Godfather. Kowalski's at this corner table. There's this little woman, tiny woman, Teresa, his wife, was tiny, with this scowl on her face, like it was a comedic caricature that somebody drew on her face. And then you got Mike Hollow, who is, here's this all-American guy. So we walk in, Mike's immediately up, oh, hey, Randy, hey, Jamie, how are you? This is Walter and Teresa. Walter doesn't blink. Walter doesn't make a move to shake my hand. And Teresa kind of growls at me. And I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. So we sit down. And what had happened was Walter did a lot for the industry. He had a lot of students. Walter wasn't a business guy. So a lot of times from what I had heard, that if you wanted to train at Kowalski's, what you did was you showed up with a couple $1,000s in cash, you handed it to him, and congratulations, you were a lifetime student. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say how much of that $2,000 was reported or recorded or anything, but he was running a wrestling school. This was old. He was an old timer. This is what they did. But you have Mike Hollow, who I think at the time was newly married. Maybe they had just, no, they couldn't have, newly married, was planning on having a family. Mike was starting to worry about things like longevity, lawsuits, people getting injured. He needed some protection, and that's what we were selling. We were selling, if you come on board with us, corporations, law, all that stuff. So Mike really wanted us on board. Also, we mentioned earlier, maybe we glossed over this, Rich, Kowalski was huge for the dojo shows.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, those were amazing. That was a treat. I don't think wrestling fans even realized what they were seeing.
But what were they? Because I never went to one.
So I actually did go to a couple. What those were guys. So this is long before the Deep South Wrestling, the Florida Championship Wrestling, and now the NXT. These were shows. I think a lot of the guys trained with Dory Funk down in Central Florida. What these dojo shows were, where they were guys that were under developmental contracts, that were working, you know, whatever indie promotions nationwide that they had affiliation with, that would always work the dark match before a Raw and a SmackDown. What this was you would go to a show, one of these dojo shows, and it was promoted, I want to say, either, I don't think it was IWF. I think they were promoted under Mike Sparta's WWA.
Yeah.
But you would get all these guys in what was basically some of their first matches. When I'm talking names. I'm talking Hall of Famers. I'm talking Kurt Angle.
Yep.
Edge, Christian, head trainer at NXT, at the Performance Center right now, Matt Bloom, a.k.a. Baldo. Draws.
Oh, yeah. The names that came through there. And again, the reason we're even talking about them now is these were all the two guys who had almost always worked them were Dukes and Coach Hollow.
Yes, because they were the only ones that could really be trusted in the area to, you know, not only have quality matches, but ensure that these rookies, these greenhorns at the time, that WWF at the time was investing all their money in, had to make sure that they were protected and in the hands of qualified workers. And that's exactly what Dukes and Hollow and a bunch of the other fellas from there were all about. So, I mean, the dojo shows were amazing.
Right. But now, by the time we walk into El Mafioso restaurant, those dojo shows had dried up. And we had started to make inroads with WWE. At that time, we had at least reached out to Tom Pritchard. And we were starting to make inroads, and we realized we need a school. So what Coach was looking at, Mike Hollow was looking at was, okay, here's an opportunity of guys who their ultimate goal is WWE. And that's what Mike wanted. Mike and I, to this day, when we sit down, when we meet up for beer, we still talk about how companies, how schools, and how workers now, what are they doing to better position themselves for WWE? I've fought with Brian Malonis. I've fought with Brian Fury ad nauseum about, oh, well, you know, the business has changed. Oh, you know, now you can have a great career. Even if you're not signed by WWE, you can have a better career. I still call bullshit. You put a gun to anybody's head and say you have a choice. You can be signed by WWE or you can try to make it on your own. What's your decision? 99.9 are going to say, yeah, I'll take the WWE deal because it's still the better option. And, of course, the 0.1% are the Young Bucks because that's one everybody always throws at me. Oh, well, they turned down offers. And now Cody's a new one. And I'm like, two things. He was with WWE and got let go. He's taking advantage of a great situation for himself now. And all he's doing is better positioning himself for when he goes back there to be A-level talent and get paid like that. So don't give me that load of crap either. Anyway, Mike and I, we were all, that's where Mike and I were always on the same page, is that WWE focus. So that's what brought Mike to the table, was he needed a promotion, we needed a school, we were using all of his people anyways, so why not do this? Now our only stumbling block was convincing Kowalski that this was
and
a good idea.
And Teresa.
Oh, and Teresa. And God rest both their souls. Unfortunately, both Walter and Teresa have passed. And, you know, depending on how time goes today, Rich, either we'll get through all of this today, or we actually joked we may have to break this episode up into two portions. I was very fortunate that at the end of his life, I had a very close relationship with both Walter and Teresa. And, you know, I'll tell a part of the story now, to the point where when Kowalski was on his deathbed, literally he had had a heart attack and a stroke and was basically on life support, I was actually traveling, and this is going to sound crazy, Rich, because this was so long ago, that I was traveling in Europe. And back then, you didn't have cell phones that worked everywhere, and you didn't have iMessaging. I actually got myself a satellite phone so that three people could call me while I was in Europe. Mike Hollow, Teresa, and Triple H.
Oh, my.
For updates on Killer Kowalski's health. So by the end, I was very fortunate. I became very close friends with both Walter and Teresa. Going back to 2001, though, oh, my God, was Teresa the biggest bitch on the face of the earth to me. That woman would make like the statues on the carvings on Mount Rushmore look emotional. All she did was scowl at me and scowl at us through the entire meal.
And, well, I can tell you too, from my earlier dealings with Walter and specifically Teresa, because remember I broke in 1993. And eventually Tony Rumble, my mentor, the man that brought me into the business, he and Kowalski, after a couple of years of not being on the same page, ended up working together. And anytime we had Walter on a show, oh my God, if Teresa, if I failed to mention that, hey, we have Killer Kowalski 8x10 photos on sale.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, she grabbed me like I was coming out of the ring, and she like walked up to like ringside and grabbed me by the arm and said, "You have not mentioned Walter's pictures yet." And I'm like, "Oh my, I'm sorry. I'll get right on that." But yeah, so I mean, I'm right there with you, and I'm so envisioning her in my mind right now. And I'm not speaking ill of the deceased or of her in any way, but she was a bulldog.
Oh, look, I told you. I'm going to say wonderful things about Walter and Teresa later on as we talk about them. Mm-hmm. At this point, he was a grumpy old bastard, and she was a bitch. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, man, this is not going well. And then you got Randy, who he had his approach. And on this one, Randy, I needed Randy at this meeting. Because I needed somebody who was just digging in and saying, look, we need to do this. We should do this. Here's why. And Randy went into full sales mode. He did a great job. Then you had Mike kind of backing it up. But I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Mm-hmm. At some point during the meeting, I remember, though, I forget what was said. And I brought up, oh, yeah, I grew up in North Reading. And Walter kind of looked at me. I said, I brought up the restaurant Kitty's. And that was the only time Walter even acknowledged me. Because Kitty's was a different, it was the North Reading version of the restaurant I was sitting in Malden.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Walter was a regular there too. So when I said Kitty's, I got a little bit of credibility with the guy. He's like, oh, you know Kitty's. I'm like, yeah. I said, my parents growing up, I used to go there every Friday night. Mm-hmm. Yes, I eat there. We go every Wednesday for lunch. I'm like, oh, I love Kitty's. I said, and then of course, immediately I step in it because I said, oh yeah. I said, I always get the veal parm. What do you get?
And what is a vegetarian.
But Walter says, I don't eat meat. I'm a vegetarian. The only meat I eat is pussy. I'm a vegetarian. Oh. And I'm like, oh, why? Okay. And I'm like, what just happened? So I'm like, I'm going to go back to being quiet. And then somewhere in all of this, I remember I mentioned my last name and that it was Polish.
Yeah.
And that helped me a little bit.
Of course.
So now this meeting ends with, okay, we'll think about it. A couple of days later, we get a phone call from Mike Hollow. Hey, Walter's on board. Let's do this. Great. Randy goes and meets with them, goes and meets with Mike and Walter. We kind of put pen to paper. In theory, nothing was actually signed at this stage, that, okay, we're going to have this working relationship. We're going to be their exclusive promotion. They're going to be our exclusive school. Blah, 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 blah. Work with everybody. It was what we needed. The next thing we were going to do, because we used to have, we've talked about this before, the old TV station. The old TV show on WUNI.
WHLL 27, Wooster,
yeah.
Boston.
Wooster, Boston. Thank you.
Univision. Yes.
So, and one of the things we were going to do is we were going to put a Killer Kowalski commercial on there. So now I grab the Chaotic camera at the time, and I go to Walter's school on probably a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. I walk in, and if you went to this, it was in an old karate dojo, right? What was his name?
Richard Byrne.
Who has
also since passed away. Superstar Richard Byrne ran a karate school in affiliation. He and Walter worked together. They promoted together and everything. So you're there and you climb those rickety wooden stairs.
Yep. And I walk in and I see some people I know in the ring. Now, ironically, that night, Mike's not there. Coach isn't there. But Arch Kincaid is there. April's there. We say our hellos. And I knew, I had learned at this point, be very respectful. I shook hands and then I sat in the corner quietly. I've got the camera. And all of a sudden, I have somebody, and I want to say, if we can ever talk to him, I want to say it was John Walters, called me over and said, Walter wants to talk to you. Okay. So there's a little side room. So we go in there. Walter starts lacing into me. I don't know what the fuck you're doing in my school. You're trying to screw me. You're trying to take my money.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm like, I'm here to shoot a commercial. I'm like literally just trying to shoot. Put the goddamn camera away. Get the fuck out of here. I'm like, now people out. Now all of a sudden, Rich, you know the sounds of a wrestling school, right? The banging, the bumping. All of a sudden, there's no sound coming from the wrestling room anymore. Everybody's frozen. And I'm like, you know, Walter, I don't understand. You know, no, I heard. And all of a sudden, he pulls out a poster of ours.
Okay.
Like one of our show posters. And on the poster, it said something like, and I'm going to say again, I'll say it was John Walters or April. Killer Kowalski student, John Walters. And he's like, I didn't say you could use my name. And I'm like, I don't even know where this came from. Because at the time, I was making the posters. And I don't know if it was a street teamer. I don't know. Maybe it was you, Rich. I don't know. But I'm like,
it wasn't me.
I have no idea, Walter. Get the hell out of here. I'm like, all right. So now I got to walk back out there. I got to walk back through the training room and get to the stairs. And as I'm walking, Arch Kincaid makes a beeline toward me. And he gets me back on the rickety stairs. He goes, Jamie. He goes, welcome to Wally's world. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, this happens sometimes. He's like, I'll see you Friday at the show. I'm like, all right. And I went, I remember, you know, at the time cell phones weren't, we didn't have an iPhone in our pocket. I think I had to go back to my car and like plug in my car phone type thing.
Yeah.
And I left messages for Randy. I left messages for Hollow. I'm like, I don't know what the hell just happened, but I just got thrown out. I'm done. I'm going to go drink somewhere. Because to get yelled at, screamed at by a WWF at the time legend, that throws you off. And what everybody needs to understand, Rich, and you know this. Mm-hmm. On the day he died, Killer Kowalski, he was still a big dude.
Oh, yeah. Very intimidating man. Very intimidating man. Nice guy if you knew him. But, yeah. And, you know, it's funny you should mention his passing, and I don't want to break your train of thought. But when this episode airs, we are probably just about 2 weeks away from the 10-year anniversary of Walter passing.
Yeah. Yep.
August 30th of 2008. So... Yes, a very large, hulking, intimidating man with big, giant hands.
His hands were massive. When you tell people, when you would shake his hand would just envelop yours.
Yeah.
Like your hand disappears and all that was left would be Walter's huge grip.
And he would always put a little extra squeeze on there, especially if he liked you. So, he would just take it, and you know how, like, if you were to squeeze like your index finger and your pinky, like that whole part of your hand, like as if you were pushing the index finger into the pinky.
Yeah.
Walter would do that. He would shake your hand, and just you. Oh my goodness, he was just a hulk of a man.
Yes.
300 pounds in his prime, 6'8", vegetarian, lean as lean could be, but even after the fact, man, just a big hulk of a man.
Yeah, so that's the big part of the story of the start of the CC that nobody knows is we had a deal in place with Kowalski. I actually remember the night we found out we had the deal. We were shooting vignettes with Arch and April Kincaid at a friend of mine's house out in Boylston, Massachusetts. Where we were doing this weird, sexy, incestuous thing.
Oh, yes,
never mind.
We were.
But
the brother and sister.
The brother and sister. But we had them out there, and that's when Randy got the call. Okay, Walter agreed. Great. And we were all high-fiving and celebrating.
Yeah.
Now I go back to the commercial, and the thing nobody realizes is, yes, the second time I ever encountered Walter Kowalski was him screaming at me and throwing me out of his wrestling school.
Oh, my God.
So what I'll do now is we'll take a quick break, you know, and ironically, we'll hear about the legacy of the CTC. We'll hear about the NEPWA and their commercial. And then when we come back, I'll talk about how the CTC actually got up and rolling and kind of the first phases of our business with the CTC. You are listening to Let the Chaos Begin right here on the NAI Pop Network.
Are you a wrestling fan, but you've always wanted to get in the ring? Do you want to follow in the footsteps of superstars like Donovan Dijak and Flip Gordon? Then check out the New England Pro Wrestling Academy. At the NEPWA, you can live your wrestling dreams and train at the best pro wrestling school in the Northeast. Check out neprowrestling.com for information on joining and about their upcoming fantasy camp. It's neprowrestling.com. Start your pro wrestling dreams today.
Hey everyone, this is Jamie from the For the Pops podcast. You know, on our show, you hear me talk all the time about Undercover Wear, Chaotic Wrestling, and a lot of the other companies I've started or worked for. Over the course of my 20-plus year career, I've helped dozens of businesses and literally thousands of individuals reach their personal and financial dreams. And you know what? Now I want to help you. If you have a small business, a family-owned company, or maybe just a great business idea, reach out to me. Maybe you're looking for a job and need some help with your search or rewriting your resume. Just let me know. Who knows? Maybe you're a pro wrestler or a pro wrestling promoter who needs some tips on growing your role in the industry. Well, I can help. Check out our website. It's ohanane.com. That's O-H-A-N-A-N-E.com. Or just go to forthepops.com and follow the link at the top of the page. My company, Ohana Enterprises, we offer everything from individual coaching to marketing packages, to website design, and even more. Our only goal is to give small businesses and individuals the boost you need to succeed. So check us out at ohanane.com and let us help you make your dreams a reality.
You hear about Chaotic Wrestling's past on Let the Chaos Begin, but if you want to see its present and future, then go to Chaotic Wrestling Live. You can see all the Chaotic Wrestling action live and in person across New England. Go to chaoticwrestling.com/tickets to see the current schedule of shows and to purchase tickets. It's all the action of Chaotic Wrestling live at chaoticwrestling.com.
Welcome back to Let the Chaos Begin. Rich Palladino, along with my, not so much along with, but speaking with Jamie J. Makowski, wrapping up his extended Hawaiian vacation. Jamie, you know, we were talking about Killer Kowalski and how you and Walter kind of had this common ground, both with Polish last names, and Kitties of North Reading,
Massachusetts. Yes, Kitties of North Reading fame.
Which is reopening upon your return back to New England, just so you know, there was a little situation, but that's okay. But very funny because I grew up the next town over. I grew up in Reading, so yeah. I was very familiar with Kitties. They had and still have probably the best pizza you'll ever have. And being the old man that I am, we had our 30th high school reunion this past November in the brand new function room at Kitties. And from what I recall, from what I've been told, I had a wonderful time at said reunion at Kitties. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll get together there for a beverage and a slice or something.
Yeah, we'll have to, I'll Let the Chaos Begin live from Kitties.
That'd be something.
That'd be awesome.
They could be the sponsor. I mean, come on. You guys have probably dropped enough money there. Come on.
Yeah, no. Anyway.
Let's get back to the story. So where we left everybody with a cliffhanger, you go to Killer Kowalski's Institute of Professional Wrestling in Malden, Massachusetts. You climb the rickety wooden stairs. You get up there thinking you're going to film a commercial to air on WHLL TV 27 Wooster Boston. And Kowalski ends up throwing you out of his school. So where do we go from here?
So now we go into panic mode. I call Randy. I call Coach. They start talking. Coach talks to Walter. And Kowalski's like, no, I'm not doing business with these guys. And what had happened was somebody got to him. I'm betting it was probably Sparta. Mikey Sparta got to him, said terrible things. And it was actually, the ironic part was, I figured out later, Walter, when he was screaming at me, thought I was Randy. I'd like to think that if he knew it was the Polish guy from Kitties, I would have been better. but no, he thought I was Randy. So somebody got to him and said, no, they're scumbags. And we weren't entirely scumbags yet in this story. But we went back to Mike, and now Mike and his wife at the time, Marianne, they had a decision to make. Mike loves wrestling. Coach loves wrestling. He loved being a wrestling trainer. It's what he wanted to do. And as tough as it was for him, he made the decision that, okay, well, if Walter doesn't want to work with us, then I guess we're going to have to go off on our own. And we actually formed a separate entity. We formed Chaotic Entertainment Group, and that was 50-50 partners. Chaotic Wrestling owned 50%, and Mike Hollow owned 50%. Mm-hmm. And that was the corporation under which we formed the Chaotic Training Center. And that's when we made the decision, okay, Mike's going to cut ties, and he's going to go off on his own. So the first thing we had to do was find a location. Mike lived up in Plastow. I was in North Andover, so I knew we wanted to push up closer to where we were. And I called a commercial realtor buddy of mine, and I said, hey, Larry Morocco, if you're ever in the Merrimack Valley area and you need a commercial, I love Larry. Larry and I have known each other for, God, 25 years now, I guess, or 20 years now. But
no relation to Don Magnificent Morocco,
no, different,
right?
Spelling. It's M-A-R-A-C-C-O, Morocco. But anyway, so Larry and I start looking at different spaces, and it was always just gross warehouses or converted garages. And sometimes Randy would go with me, and sometimes Mike would go with me. And so then Larry calls me one day, and he's like, Jamie, I got a weird one for you that might work. And the big thing, let me rewind, Rich, while all this is going on, the logistics, we're now looking to purchase rings for the first time. And Mike, the great thing about Mike was he had his vision of what he wanted the school to be. And it was taking the best of what he saw from Kowalski. But the one thing we always did, and I'll talk about this a lot as we talk about the CTC, is what was WWE doing? Let's mirror them. Mm-hmm. So we wanted two rings. So we could have beginners in one ring, more experienced guys in another. So we're never not training. So we're purchasing, but we don't have a place yet. So Larry calls me and he says, I got an interesting place. It's in North Andover. I'm like, that's great. And he says, it's an old gymnastics school. I'm like, all right. Well, I meet up with Larry, and sure enough, I pull up to this building that I've driven by 100 times, 1,000 times. It's underneath the North Andover School of Dance. Mm-hmm. And Larry keys us in, and you walk in. There was an entry hallway. There was a little office upstairs to the left. You know, the famous office that, if you listen to everybody from Tomasa Whitney to Sasha Banks, they all have stories about conversations that happened in that office. In a weird way, that office has a little piece of wrestling history has happened in there. It had a lounge, not a bar, but it had lounge.
Yeah, it's pretty much where you do tape review and whatnot. You have a big in the early 2000s, you had a big giant tube TV, a plethora of wrestling videotapes on VHS and DVDs for viewing pleasure. But yeah, you would watch back the prior Friday's show the next week and start dissecting it, what was good, what was bad, etc. But yeah, it was like a wrestler's lounge.
And then you walked from there, you walked into the main room, and it was just this big open space. And the big thing we needed, Rich, we needed 15-foot ceilings to fit the rings and for people to stand on the buckles and be able to do moves and spots off the top rope. Mm-hmm. Rich, I walk into this room, and I can't go back in time to tell you, I'm like, holy crap, this room is great. This could work. Immediately I start to see it all come together. So I say to Larry, okay, I like it. I said, but I got to talk to Mike. I got to talk to Coach. This is really going to be his thing. This was going to be his part of the business. Mm-hmm. So I call Mike, and like we set up for a couple of days later. I meet up with Mike, and I say to Mike, all right, Mike, we're going to go look at it. I swear the story is true. I'm like, Mike, we're going to go look at this. When you see it, just look around, nod. We'll talk about it later, and we'll get back to Larry. Mm-hmm. Great. We key in. We walk in through the main part, okay, the little entryway. There's the office. I'll look down the hallway. There's the lounge. Oh, this a couple of bathrooms. Oh, this is nice. Mike opens the door. He's like, oh, there are no showers here. I'm like, nah, that does kind of suck. There are no showers. We walk into the main room, the big room, and Mike Hollow, oh, this is perfect. Oh, look at and now he's just walking around telling where we're going to put everything. And I look over. Larry Morocco has got this shit-eating grin on his face right now. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. I'm like, you got me. I have no negotiation. It was like what you'd watch in a sitcom when they go car shopping. But Mike's running around like a little kid.
Oh, my God. I could just picture your face right now, and I'm just picturing Mike like a kid in a candy store. Because let's face it, the former Chaotic Training Center, now the New England Pro Wrestling Academy, is a better venue than most halls that house independent wrestling shows these days. We've already talked about how much I hate a studio, a shitty, tiny studio ring that you just step up and, oh, I'm in a squared circle right now. Yeah, it is perfect location. I mean, perfect everything. 15-foot ceilings, can do stuff off the top. You don't have to use the tiny rings, and it is a phenomenal
facility.
Even with
two rings, we had areas to set up TV sets, stanchions. We used to store our equipment. I mean, tons of room in there.
I always wanted to do TV tapings out of there. I always thought
that would have been great.
That was always my thing. My idol was Gordon Solie. I said, all I want is a podium with the Chaotic banner behind me. We could, you know, put 50 or 60 people in here, be like WTBS in the 70s and 80s, old-fashioned studio wrestling. Never came to be. But it's just it's a great place. I love going there. If I'm ever in the area, you know me.
Yeah.
I just pop in Tuesday night, Thursday night, just hang out and just watch, just because the building is got everything you could want except for a shower. So
obviously now we sign the lease and we're doing this, but it's still kind of hush hush. Well, now that we've done it, we've signed the lease, the rings have been ordered. Mike has to go to Walter and tell him, this is what I'm doing. And Mike went to him very matter-of-factly. Look, Walter, I'm having a family. I'm married. I've got to protect myself. I wanted to work with you. You've made it impossible. And I have to leave and go out on my own. That was the thing we did that I still think was okay. Sometimes this happens in business. You leave where you were to start something on your own. And you hope it all works out. Yep. Where the criticism got us was how we targeted Kowalski's students, which we 1,000,000% did. We took the best students he had and said, if you want to keep working with us, you have to come train with us too. Oh, by the way, we've already scheduled a camp with Tom Pritchard. Pat Patterson was the first one we brought in. We already have a date that Pat's coming in. We're working with Talent Relations, and we sold them on that famous Chaotic Wrestling, dreams can come true, pie in the sky. You're either with us or you'll never sniff our ring again.
And it was also that we also got this stigma that if you did not train at said school, you would not be a part of Chaotic Wrestling. We had that stigma for a long time.
It wasn't a stigma. It was a truth.
It was a truth. And until a few years later, we did end up having a couple of infiltrates.
But the key was always once we got them, 9 times out of 10, we would say, great.
Yeah.
But you got to train here. You know, Warbeard Hansen's a perfect example. He didn't train with us until he got his way on shows. And we said to him, you want to keep on shows? You better come on board with the CTC. Now, he wanted to because I think he recognizes the level of training he was going to get. I always make it sound like we were in this powerful position. Usually it was mutual that guys were okay with saying, all right, well, great. I'd just as soon train there as wherever I'm training. But no, we played some hardball, and the first two enemies we made out of this, well, obviously were Walter and Teresa didn't love us right now. And then Wagner and April, who I believe they had just left Chaotic Wrestling not long before as part of this whole shakeup, they decided they were going to stay with Walter as his head trainers and running his school. And that's the line in the sand that got drawn between us and them for a while. It was Wagner, April, and Walter versus Randy, Mike Hollow, and me. Because the other thing we did is we also took his two, we took all of his trainers. We took Mike Hollow, his head trainer, Duke Stalton, who was a secondary trainer, and then Jerry Bowser, who we talked about earlier on a show, the Boston Brawler. He was kind of the what we called the drill sergeant of the CTC. Looked like Stone Cold, and he would always train the new guys. So all of a sudden, we took all of Kowalski's trainers. We took 90% of his good students. And again, all of the people who were trying to join Kowalski's, Mike Hollow was the one they had been talking to. So Mike Hollow reached out to all of them and said, hey, you know what? Come over here instead. That's how we got Brian Malonis. I think Brian Malonis' friend Cleon was training at Kowalski's.
Yeah, Cleon Genetics.
And we brought Cleon over, and Malonis came. I want to say, if not the first, Brian Malonis was like one of the first six students signed at the CTC.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, I remember a very and again, I don't mean to interrupt, but I remember the some of the guys that would be around Chaotic for a while, guys like Tony Omega. I remember
Cherry Payne.
Geez, that's Cherry Payne.
Scarecrow.
Scarecrow, Grub. Remember Matt Grabowski?
Yep.
You know, so I mean, there was a good plethora, a good mix. So you had a lot of the guys that had been at Kowalski's that had come over. You had guys that were training in places that had no right calling themselves training facilities that came over. And, you know, and then you had people that just, hey, oh, there's a school in North Andover. I want to be a wrestler. And that's where, you know, the Grubs and some of these other folks came in as well. I'm going to dare say Psycho as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, you're starting to, Psycho came in a little bit later.
Yeah.
But it was like that first group. And remember, there was, Rayanne, Brittany Summer. Brittany Summer. And we still had the Chaotic Originals around. We still had Ronnie and Andy and Gino, who were all kind of still around. So all this is happening at the same time. So I can still remember, we all went in there one weekend and we painted and we renovated the whole school. It was like a big Saturday outing. And then we decided to do the opening. And this is probably another story that nobody knows except Randy, Mike Hollow, and I. In order to promote the school, we did a huge marketing blitz. I took out ads in local papers. I did mailings. I sent mailings to every principal, chief of police, mayors, selectmen, you name it in the area. I used every connection I had to blitz the area. And we created a really cool mailing piece where we took a picture of everybody on the ring. It was like Brittany, Vince Vicalo, John Walters. I remember it was Aaron Stevens in gear laying down, like on the ring apron, kind of with this teen idol pose type thing.
Of course.
Chris Nowinski was around. Chris Nowinski was in the picture.
Absolutely.
And we did this piece. And what the hell was the tagline? At our school, something about breaks. I don't remember. But it had some clever wrestling tagline that'll come to me as soon as we're done recording. And I'll dub this back in as if I knew what I was talking about.
Sure. This was before we were the birthplace of the stars.
Correct.
This
long before that.
Decades before, yes.
God, what the hell is... Anyway, so we do all this. And I remember our launch date was, I think, November something of 2001. We send all this out. I go by the school one night to do something, to drop something off before the grand opening. There's a notice on the door from the town that says, you're not authorized to open. You don't have a business license to run in North Andover. Now, we had already scheduled our open house for that Saturday. This was like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I call the number. I get some jackass selectman in the town of North Andover. Well, there's nothing you can do. You didn't follow the proper business applications. I'm like, but it doesn't matter. We're renting the space. We'll do it. I said, I'll bring it over now. Well, no, it has to get approved by the town selectman. I'm like, are you? So now I start calling every lawyer, every selectman I know in the area. I'm like, what can I do? They're trying. And because it was a wrestling school, typical stigma, they wouldn't let us open until I'd gone to present to the Board of Selectmen. So we held our grand opening. I remember Brian Malonis there in a suit and a tie. Mm-hmm. All the new students wore suits and ties. We did a grand opening, but tried to pretend we weren't open. We basically opened illegally the day we opened.
And I feel like I was there.
You were there. Everybody was there.
Because did anything make it to the newspaper, or was that a separate deal?
Nope, that was the newspaper was there. Yep. For the grand opening that didn't happen officially.
Yep, I remember. Because I remember prominently, I believe Aaron and John Walters, there was actually a picture on front page of probably whatever the local paper is.
Lawrence Eagle Tribune. There,
there it is. I should have known that. My brother was a sports writer there for years. But yeah, I remember seeing that picture, and I remember being a mark for myself. I was like, oh, look, there's me and Ben and I think Milo.
Yep.
Standing in the background in our chaotic pullovers, you know, because I got that with my contract. Yeah, I remember now that's all coming back to me.
So yeah, so holy we did this big shit. Grand opening when we were technically illegal. We weren't supposed to be open.
So we were illegals.
And I remember Randy and I, we got into a fight because people were bringing food and we're trying to hide it in case somebody walks in. In hindsight, it was all a big load of garbage.
Of course.
But then I had to go in front of the town selectmen and say, well, yes, here's why you should give us a business license. And typical wrestling shit. Well, aren't you concerned about the danger? I'm like, it was gymnastics school. We are basically right. Gymnastics for larger men.
Right.
And that was the thing I kept going back to. But I remember our new landlord, who was well-established, they actually owned the North Andover School of Dance above us. They were our landlord. But Debbie and Leo had to come with us to go to the selectman meeting as our local advocates. Oh, I mean, it was unreal what that town put us through.
What a shit show. I wonder how many independent promotions, not talking Kowalski. I wonder if anybody had a hand in that, because there are still promoters, and I'm holding up quotation marks here, that really don't promote shows that have tried to block other promotions from running in their, quote, territory, end quote. So I just wonder if any other promotions in the area may have said, hey, you guys should look into this, and do they have all their paperwork and all that? I'm just saying that
as much as I love that theory, I think it's the different side of us, the same coin. I think what happened was, because I sent out those mailings to selectmen and fire chiefs and principals,
yeah,
that somebody in the town got their nose out of joint. You know how it is in these stupid New England small towns. Oh, well, they didn't check with us, and we should know about these things. Go go bleep you yourself, Jesus! Come on.
Oh,
oh
my God!
So that's a story, you know. And everybody likes to spit shine the chaotic wrestling history. The one thing I try to get across in our podcast, Rich, is what a disorganized shit show we were. Like I said, never ever look behind the curtain, because things are a cluster f back there, and we just made it look good. So yeah, so we opened a school where we stole all the trainers, stole all the students, weren't supposed to be open, and we opened and made a big deal about it.
As only chaotic wrestling would, and lo and behold, the chaotic training center, despite the snafu, opened the doors. But I feel like there's so much more to cover, and I don't know if we're going to have enough time before
I don't think we're going to. So Rich, what I'll do is, you know, let me wrap up like this little early days portion.
Yeah.
And then what we'll do is we'll come back again next week and kind of do the chaotic training center part two, which is when it really took off. And those are going to be the stories everybody's going to want to hear about. Because as we've been talking... I actually just texted. I was just texting with current NXT heavyweight champion Tommaso Ciampa, and I said, "Hey, when did you join?" He actually joined in 2003.
Okay,
the CTC.
So a couple years after.
And I have stories about after he joined. But to put a bow on this part, the first two big things we did at this stage of the CTC, like I said, we had our early group of students, and the names were Brian Malonis. Two names you'll still know. Brian Malonis and Todd Fatpants Sinclair were two of our first students that joined the school. And you obviously know what they've done with their careers. well respected, but they were, now you're starting to see, okay, here's a foundation getting built of Chaotic, not just the Kowalski, you know, people we stole.
Right.
Then the first big thing we did was, fortunately, Mike Hollow, because of his days with WWE, had a great relationship with Pat Patterson. And the first thing Mike arranged was, within a month of us opening, we actually brought Pat in to do a one-day camp for us.
I remember.
And so that's what really kind of put us on the map of, oh, wow, these people are serious. And the great thing we had was anybody who walked in the doors, it looked like something WWE would have built. You know, Rich, remember back in the early days, what we did was we took everybody's T-shirt that we had made that we've talked about in previous episodes, mm-hmm. and we had them stapled around the perimeter of the room.
Yeah.
You know,
as if to say, hey, if you come here, this could all be yours and your own merchandise.
Oh,
and
I don't know if anybody knows this either, Rich. Remember in the main entrance hall, when you would first walk in the old days, the mm-hmm. wall was covered in autographed pictures mm-hmm. of every superstar of the time. I remember Edge, Undertaker, Kane, Mankind. They were all up on the walls.
Yep, Bret Hart.
So people would walk in and be like, oh, wow, look at all the people they're connected to. Do you know what I did, Rich?
Oh, God.
I went on eBay and I bought lots of autographed. Like, people would sell a lot of 25 autographed wrestler pictures.
Yep.
I would go on there and buy them, frame them, and throw them up on our wall as if they had come through our school.
That was the worm on the end of the line. That's how you're getting them in.
And then what I would do is I would pepper in the ones like Bret Hart really did come in and see us.
Exactly.
And his would say too Chaotic.
Yeah.
So we peppered in with the ones like, and there was, I forget, you want to talk about ballsy and being a-holes. We had one of Killer Kowalski up there. To Mike Hollow, best of luck. From Killer Kowalski. Literally the guy we just screwed over.
As if he was endorsing.
So now all of a sudden, people would walk in and he'd be like, holy crap, we had show posters. We had all these autographs on the wall. We had the lounge, which Coach and Marianne donated, their old leather living room piece. So we had these big black sofas with the, like you said, the big tube TV. Then a freshly painted training room with two rings and everything. Why wouldn't you want to join there? Because we were making it look like, once again, holy crap, we're a hell of a lot better than we really were.
Is wrestling heaven. I donated a weight bench and some weights and stuff. I mean, and I remember in those days, Jerry Bowser would, I brought all the stuff. It was in my mom's basement. I wasn't using it. Mm-hmm. I brought it to the school. And I remember Jerry Bowser made every student line up, shake my hand and say thank you. And then the next show I did for Chaotic, there was a card that was signed by actually individual cards.
Really?
Not only did he have them come over and say, you come over here and you thank Rich for his donation and blah, blah, blah. And then in cards, I'd have to go find them somewhere. But literally cards from any student at the time. Thank you so much for donating the equipment, which I'm sure Jerry was probably holding them in a hammer lock.
Oh, yeah.
Signing it. But, you know, that's
and
that's
like
what we
once
had.
A month, Bowser would make all the new students get the mops and the sponges and clean the whole place top to bottom. And Mike Hollow, he was a neat freak too. I mean, that place would sparkle when mm-hmm. you'd walk in there. It wasn't like this divey gross wrestling school. But once again, it was a perfect example of those knuckleheads running Chaotic, shining and polishing something to make it look like a hell of a lot more than it really was. And, you know, it's I think Brian Malonis loves the old phrase, if you tell the lie enough times to enough people, sooner or later it becomes a truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we did once again with the Chaotic Training Center.
Dutch Mantel used to say, never let the truth get in the way of a good lie. Same thing.
Well, speaking of good lies, Rich, like we said, mm-hmm. I'm actually hopping on a plane. You have some family and some show commitments. You've got to hop on Chaotic Wrestling Live. I'm hoping that replay will stay up on Chaotic Wrestling's Facebook page, right?
Yes, we're going, well, we'll be past the fact, but yeah, Facebook Live. And
but hopefully people listening now, they can go to the Facebook page. It'll probably still be on there, and they can watch the replay or however that technology stuff works.
The replay of August 3rd for Woburn, Massachusetts, featuring the Woburn Street Fight between Chase Del Monte and the Man of Steel, Woburn's adopted son, Mike Verna. So
And I guess
that was just one match on it. It was a great night.
And
really
I don't want to
night.
Say more importantly, but based on how things went today, Rich, what we're gonna come back, we're gonna come back, and we're gonna do the Chaotic Training Center Part 2.
Yes.
Where
in 2 weeks.
We'll take it in 2 weeks from now, 2002 and beyond. And I tell everybody, this is gonna be one we'll promote ahead of time, because these are gonna be the people and the stories you're gonna want to hear about. Like I said, Tommaso Ciampa, Warbeard Hansen, Brian Malonis, Todd Sinclair, John Walters. This is when they all come into the Chaotic Training Center. Chase Del Monte, the Logans.
Aaron Stevens,
Brian Black. The list goes on. Again, that'll be part of our game on the next show, is how many
Chad,
can I name?
Chad Wicks.
Oh, he's a story in and of himself.
And
but
I know we're wrapping it up, but I'm going to give you three words that we're going to have to talk about.
Yeah.
No opportunity wasted.
And then, gosh, Rich, this might be a three-parter, because once we tell those stories, we still haven't gotten to that last era of the Chaotic Train with Mark Sherman, Sasha Banks, Julian Starr, Biff Busick, Ilya Markopoulos.
I think we dropped a couple of names over here.
I'm dropping names like crazy, because I want people to listen again when we do part two of the Chaotic Training Center, when we're back in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
But let's wrap it up here for now, Rich. And we'll encourage everybody, stay tuned. Listen to Let the Chaos Begin. I'll be back next week. I think I'll be back with Scotty Slade on For the Pops. I think he's going to let me back for another one. Rich, I don't know if you listened to the last episode yet. We had a very interesting conversation with your old friend, RJ DeLuise.
I certainly heard. And my God, he is just a natural behind that microphone. The couch pop-tato might be a thing.
He was interesting. But next time you, RJ, and I are all in town, and we're going to have to do this off the air. We need some corroboration on a certain story we told on the For the Pops podcast.
I wonder what you're speaking
of. We think we need you. So if you haven't listened to that, pop on over and listen to For the Pops. Otherwise, Rich and I will be back in 2 weeks with the Chaotic Training Center Part 2. You've been listening to Let the Chaos Begin right here on the NAI Pop Network.